Was that complaint off? Yeah.
I'll sit back here so I can touch my.
No.
Thank you, Dennis.
Somebody's gotta do it, right?
Usually me.
And you like it?
Makes it hard to breathe.
Oh, yeah.
And then I read today that it's sagebrush blooming season.
I've been wondering my health, why my allergies are out of control.
Yeah, so I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining. I'm stating facts.
No.
She's explaining.
Yes, I'm explaining. Thank you, Karen.
She's complaining.
We can make a word on
it.
Complaining.
Who was you to explain?
Explain it. Yeah.
Who was it?
Desi Arnaz, wasn't it?
Who?
Was it Desi?
Does
you
say,
oh, okay. Yeah, you
did
it.
Yeah, okay, that was it.
Wow, nicely done, Gary.
Yeah.
I thought you were way too young for that.
You don't look old, you don't look young either.
The Karen's making trouble again.
Yeah.
Hey, Holly, welcome back. Okay, let's get started. Andy, do you mind standing up here to get started?
Quiet pray. Father, we come before you now, thankful for the ability to meet here together this evening. We ask that you would be with all of us here in this class and with the people in the other classes here, we might learn a little bit more about you tonight. Be with Daniel and all the others who are teaching and give them a remembrance of the things they studied and prepared. We ask, Father, that you would help us each day to be determined to move a little bit closer to you and become a little bit more like you and be mindful of the pattern and the example that we have in the life of your Son and Jesus. Yes, that you would forgive us for our shortcomings. We ask in Jesus' name.
Amen. All right. This is just for reference of the passages that we have that we're going to study tonight and Sunday. So in case anyone didn't get them or doesn't have them yet, they are there for your reference. We're not going to be switching any slides tonight. It's just there for the show. Tonight we're going to finally get into these passages after two of our studies of kind of leading into them. These past two and next two are all about the promised land. Some of the things we're going to talk about tonight and Sunday, we've kind of already talked about and looked at, but we've not looked at them in the way that we're going to look at them tonight and Sunday. First of all, we talked about with the promised land that it's a promised land. It was promised to the fathers, it was promised to Israel, and God is fulfilling his promise. And then next we looked at that one of the reasons God is giving Israel the land is because of the sin of the people. We looked briefly at Leviticus 18 and 20. To talk about the kinds of things they did and how the land spit them out. We talked about the land itself, why it was a land of promise. We talked about how in Deuteronomy chapter 11, I think it was, says that God has his eye always on the land and why that might be. And we talked about the fulfillment of that, and that kind of is where we're starting tonight. Let's go to Romans 15. Romans 15, we'll read verse 4.
Everything that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through the endurance taught in the scriptures and the encouragement to provide, we might have hope.
We sometimes think of the old as the Bible as a whole, in that they all kind of happen in the same time frame. Even though we know they didn't, we sometimes think and act like that. But even for Paul, when he's writing this, the things that we're reading in Deuteronomy was 1,400 years before Paul lived. Yeah, 1,400 years before Paul lived. So even for him, it's ancient history. So even he's looking back at it, looking at it through, you know, rose-colored eyes or lenses or whatever it may be. And then 1 Corinthians 10, verse 6 and verse 11. We'll skip all the other verses.
Now, these things happen as examples for us that we should not crave evil things as they also crave. Now, these things happen to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction upon whom the ends of the ages have come.
One of the reasons we turn to the Old Testament is the examples. Men of faith like David, Abraham, Moses, etc., the prophets and the way they responded being given the prophecies, the people, the way they responded to being given the prophecies by the prophets and the law. And in this specific context in 1 Corinthians 10, how the people responded negatively to the blessings and the providence and the direct interaction they had with God in the wilderness. And between Romans 15, verse 4, and these two passages in 1 Corinthians, these are kind of the way we need to look at the Old Testament a lot. Most Christians kind of gloss over the Old Testament as if it's not relevant to us, but it's entirely relevant for so many ways, and this is just one of them. One of the other ideas that we've, and to me, these three verses, Romans 15, verse 4, and 1 Corinthians 10, 6, and 11, are kind of supporting verses for the idea of shadows and fulfillments. Someone to explain shadows and fulfillments? Anyone?
Explain it?
Yeah, explain what shadows and fulfillments are.
Well, a shadow would be like the pictures of Christ that we have in the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, it's all true in the Old Testament. And the fulfillment, of course, would be.
We talk about them all the time. The Lamb of God going to the Passover Lamb. Israel is the church. As Moses looked up the serpent.
There are even people who were like Daniel's, or pardon me, Joseph's life.
Yep.
Was a picture of pretty much everything that happened in Jesus' life. The ark was a picture of Jesus.
The ark, the tabernacle, the temple, well, the priesthood, yeah.
That's that ark, but I mean, you know, Noah's ark.
Oh, Noah's ark, yeah, that yeah.
Which, you know, I'm sure that's where we get the expression today that somebody missed the boat. If you miss that boat, I mean, you really missed it.
Or the Titanic. I guess it's probably a good thing you missed that boat, though, huh?
Yeah.
So we look at these three verses, and without going to Colossians or Matthew 5 or Hebrews, to look at the idea of shadows more there. To me, these three verses are supporting verses for that concept, not just in, and by the way, those shadows, those are a form of prophecy. Let's not forget that too. These kind of help us to look at the Old Testament, not just as prophecy, not just as shadow fulfillment, but as example as well. And we can turn to, even with God, how God dealt with people written down in the Old Testament gives us example of how God deals with us and the world even today and in the future, because God changes with every shifting of the wind, right? What is God if he's not changing with the wind? What is he?
Consistent,
unchanging, without variance, a shadow of turning. I think James said something like that, right? Right. So with that in mind, we start turning to the land. And let's see. How about I just take it? As we're going through these verses, these passages and some other supporting passages, we want to look at these verses in two ways. And we want to look at them both at the same time in this way as much as possible. One, what God meant to them and what these things would have meant to them. But then pretending as if God is speaking to us and what those things would mean to us, looking at these verses as shadows, as both, and seeing how they might be fulfilled in us. And there's even some verses we're going to see that we can go, oh yeah, that's quoted in some New Testament passage. And then hopefully we'll get to where we're seeing a true fulfillment in places in the New Testament. Yes, Larry.
You know, it's all God's authority, but it's funneled or channeled through Christ.
Right.
He's the one that thinks things in my lives.
Strange to hold me
down. Sure, you did.
I had to log out and log back on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, let's start with Deuteronomy chapter 8. Verses 7 and 9. Now notice that I'm not starting in chapter 4 because we're not looking at these things chronologically through Deuteronomy. We're going to look at them sort of thematically. So we're going to start with Deuteronomy 8, verses 7 and 9. Go read those, please.
For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water and fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines, fig trees, pomegranates, and a land of olive oil and honey.
Verse 9.
A land wherein thou shalt eat bread without
scarceness.
Thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest eat blood.
There's a lot of these small little sections in Deuteronomy that describe the promised land. This describes not just the blessings that will come in the land, describes the land itself. So just kind of summarize the kind of things or the way these verses talk about the land itself. John?
Good, solid, fertile land.
Good, solid, fertile land. That's a good way to put that.
Plant what you want and it'll grow. Yeah.
Yep. In fact, is it, I think it's chapter 11. Yes, chapter 11, verses 10 through 12. It kind of, it goes right along with these verses. We'll go right back to chapter 8, but just let's read those real quick.
For the land into which you are entering to possess it is not like the land of Egypt from which you came, where you used to sow your seed and water it with your foot like a vegetable garden. But the land into which you are about to cross to possess it, the land of hills and valleys, drinks water from the land for which the Lord your God cares. The eyes of the Lord your God are always on it, from the beginning even to the end of the year.
So he compares the promised land to Egypt in that, you know, Egypt, you just walk around, drop a seed, and you can do that with your foot, and it'll grow. Now, the promised land is lush and prosperous, too, but the promised land has something Egypt didn't have. It has hills. It has valleys. So even though you can still plant stuff, and it's very lush and, what was that phrase you used again, John?
Fertile.
There's hills and there's valleys. You can't just go anywhere in the promised land. You've got to be a little more judicious about it, but it's still very fertile. So let's go back to chapter 8, verses 7 through 9. And what else do we see about the promised land?
Good land, land of brooks and water, fountains, depths, springs.
Yeah, in chapter 11, talk about how the land drinks the water from the rain, right? Some, like around here, sometimes the rain drops, falls, and just, okay, well, it rains, thanks for it, but, you know, desert doesn't really, I mean, it helped, but it doesn't really help. Well, it was there, the rain comes down, and the land just goes, devours the water from the rain, whereas the other places aren't like that. So what else? There's one more I want to talk about just because of how cool it is. Verse 9. Yeah, the rocks are full of iron. What does that imply?
Tools,
weaponry, even.
Fashion stuff.
Create even creativity with just artistic stuff. Things can be made of metal with artistic stuff. So you pull the iron from the stones, you get other metals, you start mixing, you get cool Damascus steel, and you start making your pickaxes and your shovels, and you know there's going to be plenty of it. And under Solomon's reign, during his reign, I think it says something like gold and silver became like copper, where it was so plentiful. It was like, oh, look some more gold. And like most people, oh, look, gold. Whereas in Solomon's times, like, yeah, gold. And then it talks about the copper. And out of whose hills you can dig copper. Very famously, not so famously, actually, it's not very well known, that in many parts of the Americas, Native Americans dug copper. You got into the hills and valleys and stuff, and one of their big deals was copper. And that's what, so not only is there going to be prosperity with food and the iron, but it's also going to be copper. And copper is used a lot for artistic stuff, but also it's a very pretty metal that can be used for fashioning. Even parts of the temple and the tabernacle were made from copper. Yes?
I used to have copper coin from back in those days.
Oh, really?
Roman cave. And they used rid of copper and just stamped it.
Yeah.
Chopped it off around the edges and used it as money.
Cool. So these few verses are describing the land itself, the kinds of things we can read into. Let's now go to chapter 6, verses 10 through 10 and 11.
So it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land of which he has sworn to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities which you did not build, houses full of all goods which you did not fill, hewn out wells which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, when you have eaten and are full.
So the previous verses talked about the natural resources that were there waiting for them to get into. These verses are talking about what?
What the other people put in, you're going to take away from them.
Yeah, what the people of the land already have that's going to be left that you can just kind of move in and take over. Yes, Kathy?
Also in 11, looking forward, it describes the land of milk and honey. What does that mean?
Milk is one of those things that even in ancient times, depending on what culture you're talking about, though, milk was a sign of prosperity. Milk came from cows, but it also came from goats. And livestock that isn't well fed, well nourished, is not going to produce good milk, if any milk. So it's an implication of prosperity, but also the opposite of drought and famine. There's lots of rain, food, even for the animals, which provide food for people. And butter, and in some parts of the East, has always been a big part of their diet. Not so much this part of the East, but other parts of the East. So there's that as well. And then honey, we have some sagebrushes that we have some bees in right now. And for the last, 5 to 8 years, I keep hearing these, their bees aren't getting their pollen, not getting enough honey. Which, in some parts of the world is probably true. But I've got bees right in my front yard. Well, what are they doing? They're getting pollen to make. Anybody see the bee movie? No, not many of you have kids young enough to see the bee movie.
Okay.
You saw the bee movie, right? Right? What's that movie all about?
I didn't see it.
Angie, you remember seeing the bee movie with your daughter?
Yeah, like 1,000 times.
What's the bee movie all about?
What's it about?
Yeah.
I don't know. I
tuned
it out.
Solomon?
Isn't it about a human trying to like take those bees, their food from them?
Humans have been taking the honey from the bees, yes.
We're taking advantage of the bees.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's kind of went on strike.
Yeah, the bees went on strike and insisted they have all their honey back. And all the flowers in the world started dying because the bees are so vital to the natural, what's it called?
Ecosystem.
They kind of make, they're one of the many things that make everything just work.
That's all God and, set it up.
Yeah.
This didn't happen by random selection or blind chance.
Right.
God set this up. Queen bees.
Right.
Look what queen bees do to the hive.
Right.
And you look at all these elements. We did it all. Our father.
Right. So the honey implies this, kind of the same thing with the cows and the milk, but from a different perspective. And it also has to do with food. You know, milk and then honey also is sweetener and is a really big part of a lot of those cultures' diet, especially when it comes to desserts and stuff. So so that's what those verses are about. And all this has to do with the land, where they're going in. They're going to have some work to do, though, when they get in the promised land, all right? But the work they're not going to have to do, really, that a lot of people have to do when they go into a new land, they're not going to have to till the ground. They're not going to have to cut trees down to clear for clearing. They're not going to have to build houses, hewn out wells. All that stuff's already there. And then on top of that, when they get really bored of all the stuff they've already got, they can, you know, I think I want some fresh copper. I like to go do some mining. They can go do some mining. They can plant new stuff. And it just snowballs up.
That's
from there.
Again.
Yeah.
He gave a turnkey operation.
Which brings us to.
He didn't do anything.
Which brings us to God. So that's what the land is going to be. What's God's part in all of this?
He's provided it.
In what way is he providing it to Israel specifically? So what?
Conquering it.
Well, in what way is God conquering it?
The people are conquering the people, but because of the things that God has provided for them.
Right.
The people have already been given to them. They just have to go in and take it.
Let's read chapter 7. And remember, right now we're only looking at God and Israel from that perspective. We haven't got to us yet. But be thinking about that. We need to be seeing ourselves and the church in this. In this as well. So chapter 7, verses 12 through 16.
And it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness, which he swore to your forefathers.
Oh, we're talking about the conquering the land. We need to skip down to verse 16 through 24. 16 to 24, yeah. Same chapter.
You shall consume all the people whom the Lord your God will deliver to you. Your eyes shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. If you should say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispose of them? Which is what the spies said. You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh, and to all Egypt, the great trials which your eyes saw, and the signs and the wonders, and the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them until those who are left and hide themselves from your perish. You shall not dread them, for the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beast would grow too numerous for you. But the Lord your God will deliver them before you and will throw them into great confusion until they are destroyed. He will deliver their kings into your hand, so that you will make their name perish from under heaven. No man will be able to stand before you until you have destroyed them.
So, commentary. Tim introduced us by talking about how God will conquer the people for them. Look at the way, in the creative ways, God talks about how he's going to lead the people into conquer the promised land. Name some things and comment on it.
What is leading Egypt?
What?
How he led them out of Egypt.
And in what way did he lead them out of Egypt?
by showing the Egyptians all the signs and wonders and wonders.
With great power and might that no one else can reproduce except the one true creator of the universe, right? Not just great powers and wonders, but power and wonders that were quite severe and quite unique, right? And I've said this before, but because it's my favorite one, I'm going to say it again. My favorite of the 10 plagues is darkness, because the Bible specifically says how when darkness came, there was only darkness over the Egyptians. Wherever the Israelites were, there was not darkness. There was still light. That's my favorite one. And because God knew, he didn't need the blood on the doorposts and lintels to know who his people were. He knew who his people were. That miracle showed it. But that also showed, like, how many times can you go into a particular part of the world and there'll be darkness in one part of that land and light in another part? That's extremely rare, right? Like, go somewhere in this area and there'll be darkness in Verde and light in Spanish Springs. Not just like darkness, like it's cloudy, but like nighttime darkness. Does that happen?
No.
But could you in Verde, if there was complete darkness in Verde, could you see the light in Spanish Springs? Absolutely, you could, because they're close enough and the geography is perfect for that.
It wouldn't be dark.
Huh?
And you'd see some light, so it wouldn't be total darkness.
But where you are in Verde, it'd still be dark, right? That's the distinction that God made with the Israelites and the Egyptians with that miracle. He did a couple of miracles too, but it's just, that's my favorite one, easiest one to explain. My point is, I don't remember my point. So, that's right, because like the Egyptians, he's not just, hey, now go in and conquer, kill everybody. There were miracles, there was power, there was great wonders and signs that led Israel into the promised land. So Israel, in crossing the Jordan, built walls to separate the Jordan, cross on dry land, and then took the walls out, right? Is that how they entered the promised land? No. How did they enter the promised land?
Walked.
Well, yeah, they walked, but did they build the walls?
God.
When? Not the Jordan. I mean, the Jordan, not the Red Sea, the Jordan. When did God separate the waters?
When
the priest carrying the Ark of the Covenant stepped in the Jordan. God separated the Jordan. So, miracle number one. Then they go to Jericho, and they lay siege to Jericho for 5 years and wipe it out, right?
No.
7 days. March around, 7th day. Walls come down. Boom. Now you go in and kill. And it repeated like that over and over again. Ai was kind of not exactly the same, but similar things. There's still great power. So how else is God going to lead Israel to conquer the people of the land?
Hornets.
We just talked about bees. Right? Anybody ever been stung by a hornet?
Yes.
Right? Now imagine hornets. What was that movie? There was a movie.
Killer bees.
No, well, probably. I was too young for that one. But it was the Money Pit when Tom Hanks is out playing his violin and he gets a swarm of bees start comes around. She's playing Flight of the Bumblebee in the house, and he's out there being chased by a swarm of bees. But hornets are like bees, or right? But hornets are like,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So God's gonna send hornets ahead of Israel, and they're gonna chase people away and probably kill some. So that's a big deal. And what else?
We'll drive off the nations.
Yeah, how?
Little by little.
Little by little, but then what else?
Confusion.
Confusion? We see that who knows the story of Gideon? The 300? How many of those 300 men actually took their swords to another human being in that battle? Not a single one. The Midianites were confused. That's how God sends confusion among the enemies. They end up killing each other. We call that the fog of war nowadays. But it happened at least twice in the Bible that we know of. Let's see. And then there's another particular thing. Verse 24 says, he will deliver their kings into your hand. Oh, There's another one. Not just, okay, go conquer, but the kings of the people. So this doesn't mean as much to us today, because when we conquer a government, we're thinking about conquering the government. But in a monarchy, if you take the king, what have you taken? You've taken the government, right? There's still a little bit of that, like, because if the White House, if the United States was invaded, where would the president be taken?
To the bunker.
To the bunker. He'd be, you know, put on a plane, go down to the bunker, whatever, because he's the commander in chief, right? But he's not the government. In their minds, the king is the government. All the authority, all their power, all their prestige, everything is on the head of this one person.
We're seeing this played out. Exemplary. We're seeing it played out on TV now.
I don't watch TV.
I know you don't watch TV. I've just seen it come about them, all these powers, the ruling class of these countries. We're in a serious situation.
We're not, they are.
But we have the Lord, so we're not sweating.
Right.
I'm just making a point. You want to see how these rulers and leaders and their armies.
There's actually a good one in 1 Kings, 1 Kings, when Ahab is killed, the entire army scatters. Go ahead, Kathy.
I was just going to say what Larry was going off of. He is right.
Yeah.
You said, well, we are. But we have Americans over there.
Sure.
So we are. He's right.
So, yes, Randy.
So I'd like your take. I know I got my take on verse 22. Little by little.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, for whatever, he's chosen Israel, and they can't. Like, they're not shock and awing the nation. They're going in from city to city. So they're going city by city. That's little by little.
I know that's what it means, but, you know, why did God do it that way? He did, and you will not be able to put an end to them quickly, lest the wild beasts grow too numerous.
Okay.
You see where I'm going?
Maybe. Read the line again.
Well, it says, you will not be able to put an end to them quickly, lest the wild beasts grow too numerous for you. Is it that, well, I'll give you my take, is it that it wasn't that they just invaded the whole thing and God gave them everything, and then they couldn't really inhabit it, that they had to, you know, take one portion of it and kind of inhabit that, and then they all move on to take the next portion. That's how God chose to do it.
Yeah, makes sense.
Did he do it so that they wouldn't feel proud of themselves? I don't know. It's interesting. We know how it happened, but there was a specific purpose for that.
Well, he says that later. I can't remember the chapter right now. I wrote it down earlier, where he says, I think it's chapter 12. No, it's chapter 8.
That they would say that they did it by their own power.
Yeah, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
I didn't write that down. Ephesians chapter 12 or chapter 8. Maybe chapter 7. Anyway, we all know that's there, so we'll find. Someone find that and point it out later so we can keep going.
It's in
8:17. Yeah. 8:17. Oh, yeah. 14 and 17, actually.
11 through that.
Yeah.
Verse 12. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud. And you will forget the Lord your God, who brought you out from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. I don't think we read that in the wilderness.
No, it was on the list, though.
Yeah, he fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, and he might humble you, and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand made me wealthy.
I think we looked at other ones that said that. We might have looked at that one, but it was a part of several that talked about that. Okay, perfect. So he's leading them in to take over the land. We've talked about the land itself, some symbolism regarding that, and what these things would have meant to them. Now we've brought in a reminder of what God did for them during those 40 years leading up to this point. And now why is he reminding them so much of what he's done for them already?
Because they forget.
They forget? Why else?
Well, who's he talking to? Is he talking to the generation that came out of Egypt? Or is he talking to the kids in the younger generation?
Which one? There were a few that were in that older generation, Caleb and Joshua, but for the most part, he's talking to who?
Sorry, the younger generation. So
younger generation.
They need to be reminded.
They need reminded.
They may not have been around, or maybe so young.
Some younger ones, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, the things that Moses has passed down, the things that Joshua is telling them, they have to be reminded of. And which is interesting, because I think to them it would be different. If you just heard about what happened in the past, fine. Now, they've been following around. They certainly know the cloud and fire.
Some of them didn't know any life except that wandering around.
Correct.
Yeah.
They know the ark. They know those things. But when they go, I forget who they defeat. Who do they defeat on their way to Jordan?
Sihon, king of Og. Yeah. Og, king of those two guys.
That may have been the first time that younger generation understood or saw that part. Then they get to the Jordan, they cross the Jordan, and that's going to happen. But they needed to be reminded. They probably didn't partake of those things.
And there's another reason why they need a reminder. Kathy?
Like in chapter 4, even though the Israelites heard God's voice, they hadn't seen him in physical form. So they may have been tempted to worship, you know, idols and
yeah.
stuff like that. So
they only see this pillar of fire and cloud.
Yeah.
They haven't seen the mightiest works of God. So they need reminded of those things they'd heard about. Some of them saw them. Because if you're 8, because how old were you to be cursed to die in the wilderness?
Older than
20. 20 and older. Which means if you're 18,
yeah.
you're good, right? So it's been, if you're 18, now it's been 40 years, how old are you?
60.
I'm still younger than that. Right? So if I'm 47 minus 40, how old was I? How old was I at the how old would I have been at the Red Sea crossing?
Seven.
How many of you remember every little thing that happened in your life when you were 7 years old? the two.
I can't remember 7 weeks ago, seven
right.
days ago.
I have flashes of memories, but and a few concrete things, but how many of us remember being 7 years old? Maybe a few important things, but there's some important things I've been told about that I'm like, when did that happen? Tim?
Which makes me think they may not have seen that, but they certainly understood that their parents and their grandparents were no longer around.
And why?
And now they're getting told how things are going to happen. So, yeah, maybe they didn't see that, but they had to have understood, hey, we've been wandering. The older generation is now gone. My parents, my grandparents are gone. And that certainly would have helped them to understand who God was also.
He mentioned the water from the rock of Flint. They would have had that their whole lives. They've seen some powerful things, but nothing like crossing the Jordan or crossing the Red Sea on dry land with walls of water on each side. And then the Egyptians being drowned, but all the 10 plagues, the weird miracles that Moses did, etc. They were fed by quail. Some of them probably saw the serpent, the whole deal with the serpents and the bronze serpent, the manna, right? Randy?
But also he keeps reminding them, just like their fathers, when they went into the land to spy it out, you know, they realized that there were giants and it was too great of a land. They were afraid.
Yeah.
And then he keeps reminding them not to be afraid, even though the people, or the
whatever, that all the, what am I looking for? All the kingdoms that they're going to conquer were greater and bigger than they were. So what's their attitude? You know, they're afraid of that. So God keeps reminding, or Moses keeps reminding them time after time, don't be afraid. I'm going to be with you. Look what I did, you know, 40 years ago or 20 years ago, or, you know, whatever. I can handle this. You know, you guys just do what you're supposed to do.
And there's the last one. They are reminded over and over again, because if God can do that, here's what else I can do. The hornets and the driving them out with fear and confusion and all those things. And so he, in those verses we read in chapter 7, verses 16 to 24, in there he says at least twice, don't be afraid. Do not fear the nations who are mightier than you are, because who is mightier than they are? God is mightier than they are. Kathy, something else?
Also, they had the knowledge of the true God where the other nations did not.
Then there's that. They're appealing to statues of wood and stone and metal that are lifeless at best, demons at worst. Mm-hmm. And Deuteronomy says that too, that they're demons that they're worshiping. So so there's that. Is that? Okay. We only have 5 minutes left, and that's good, because now we're going to tie in really nicely on Sunday. Okay, so remember, we haven't got to yet how this applies to us. We're going to do that Sunday. So let's go now to chapter, we're still in chapter 7. Let's read verses 12 through 16. And what else God is going to do for them in the land when they get there.
Wherefore it shall come to pass, if ye hearken to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord thy God shall keep unto you, unto thee, the covenant and the mercy which he sware unto thy fathers. And he will love thee and bless thee and multiply thee. He will also bless the fruit of thy womb and the fruit of the land, the corn, wine, and thine oil, and increase the kin and the flock of the sheep in the land which he sware unto thy fathers to give thee. Thou shalt be blessed above all people. There shall not be male or female barren among you or among your cattle. And the Lord will take away from thee all sickness, and will put none of the evil diseases of Egypt, which thou knowest, upon thee, but will lay them upon all them that hate thee. And thou shalt consume all the people which the Lord thy God shall deliver thee. Thine eyes shall have no pity upon them, neither shalt thou serve their gods, for that will be the snare unto them.
So he ends with I read 16 as kind of a transition verse to go from verses 12 through 16 to 16 through 24. So what is in there that God is going to do for them? We know they're going into a land flowing milk and honey, rich resources in the land that are already there. Then there's the resources that the people are going to leave, that they're going to conquer. Then there's the people they're going to conquer. God is going to conquer them for them. Then there is their lives in the promised land.
Prevention of disease. Not going to have measles running rampant, and then everything is going to be able to reproduce after itself, families, the animals, etc.
Yeah. So the ultimate in prosperity, Kathy?
They must obey. They have to obey, or none of this is going to happen.
Sure. Well, and we're going to get to that on Sunday, because that's actually their next thing. What must they do? Number one is obey. That's almost where we're starting on Sunday. So not only is he going to bless and multiply them, the fruit of the ground, the grain, the new wine, increase the herd. How does verse 13 start?
I love them.
All right, so now we're back to what love is. Love is not a feeling. Love is action. God is going to express his love for them in ways probably no other nation in the history of the world was going to ever be blessed if they would obey. But imagine their obedience and the kind of blessings that they had, which are in later chapters of Deuteronomy as well. But then also he promises the curses that come along with disobedience, right? Basically, the same thing that happened, basically the same thing that they're going to do to the nations in the land is going to happen to them when they disobey. Well, verse 14 even says it. You shall be blessed above all people. Think about that. Is it any wonder why Jews today are still looking for this messianic kingdom and thinking that they're going to be blessed above all peoples? And even some Christians think Jesus is going to come sit in Jerusalem and make Israel this great and powerful. This sounds nice, doesn't it? Phenomenal. What nation on earth would not want to be blessed above all peoples? Our nation, some of us pray consistently, thank you for the many blessings we have in our nation that just don't exist in so many other nations, even in our time, much less in history past.
God's telling them this. Mm-hmm. He's not hallucinating.
No.
I mean, he's behind all of this.
Yep, and he's going to be.
Well, will be.
And to finish up tonight, we have like a minute left. Saul's about to get up, and there he goes. Is all of this is when you get into the land. This isn't yet, and it's kind of part two where we're starting on Sunday, is they're not in the land yet. This is all when you get to the land. So we're going to start in chapter 12 on Sunday and the things that God talks about right now, like what's happening in their lives for the past 40 years, what's happening now, but still preparing them to go into the promised land. So we'll start in chapter 12 on Sunday. Thanks, everybody.
Right. Yeah.